what do you know? It's that time again for a brand new edition of Club ADHD, the podcast. I'm your ADHD host, Russ LeBlanc, here to guide you through our journey. Not only through the podcast, but through ADHD. That's a journey, right? We're both experiencing it, maybe at different times, different places, but we're doing it together thanks to Club ADHD, which has been created for us, adults with ADHD. And not only does it include the podcast, we have our Facebook page and our Twitter account. And you probably saw the links when you checked out this podcast, because all of the podcasts are listed on clubadhd.ca, as well as the links to the Facebook page and the Twitter account. Kadak, of course, brings this to you every 2 weeks. Matter of fact, they bring Club ADHD to you all the time when it comes to the other elements of the club. And we'd like to thank them for that. Of course, Kadak is the Center for ADHD Awareness Canada. They have a fantastic website full of information about ADHD, how you can help yourself as well as help others by becoming an ADHD flag waver. That's what we'll call it. They've got templates there, and you can use them to contact physicians to get them on board about the real truth about ADHD, or politicians, or teachers, principals, whomever. It's a great place to go. That's kadak.ca. Matter of fact, they recently concluded their annual conference. This year it was in Calgary, and I've been told it was a good one. I wasn't able to attend this year. I've attended them quite often in the past. Very informative weekend event full of great speakers and information. And that's how this all started, because a lot of people were saying, I'm at a place where I can be myself. These are ADHD people talking. And that's what we want to generate here. Now, how have you been for the past couple of weeks? For me, well, a little eventful, up and down, you know, that's the way it goes. A little bit of a downer. Well, no, I'll start with the upper. I decided that, well, I've gained a bit of weight because of some changes in meds for other things that go on in my life here. And it was just too much, too fast. And I thought, well, I'm going to just cut out the eating at night and maybe stay away from a lot of the sugary stuff as well as I can. And it worked. I lost up to 15 pounds. And then came the downer. Well, kind of a downer. It felt good at the time. Thanksgiving. Oh, boy. I did not survive when it comes to adhering to my self-imposed diet. It just all looked too good. And I'm a sucker for sweets as well, especially apple pie. Oh, you know, apple pie to me is great, especially with a slab of ice cream on top. Vanilla. No, check that. Make that French vanilla. Oh, yeah. Go all the way. As far as the crust, well, you know, that's a necessary evil when it comes to apple pie. You know, it's not a pie without crust. Now, as far as the outer crust, I would tend to leave that behind unless I have lots of French vanilla ice cream that I can mix it up in and kind of make it something different. You know, I like the stuff inside. That apple. Oh, we had pumpkin pie and we had some pumpkin squares. And, well, I didn't overdo it, but I just did it because I was not doing anything up until then as far as sweets. And I just said, okay, it's time to be thankful. And with that, once you're off the wagon, if you're like me, you tend to stay off the wagon a bit. So I've been eating a little at night and doing the things that I wasn't doing before. As a result, I've gained about, I don't know, 3 or 4 pounds, which for me, I thought, hey, that's better than what I had thought. It's just I got to get back on that wagon. Unfortunately, I can't find the stepladder to get up on the wagon. If only I could take my focus for when it comes to ADHD and focus on the diet. I did that before when I was younger, in my 20s, and boy, was I focused. I was doing up to 300 sit-ups a day. And these weren't just your average sit-ups. They were elevated sit-ups where I would take my legs and put them on the couch. I'd have my wife sit on my legs, and then I'd just keep on going up to 200. And then I would sneak upstairs and do 100 more. I'd stick my legs in between the box spring and the mattress in the bedroom. Lost a lot of weight and kept it off for a few years. But then came the 30s. That's where it kind of, you know, up and down. You know what it's like. In any case, I wish I had some of that focus that I had back then. It's been a long time ago. Maybe a little too long. But I hope to get back on that wagon. I'll have my fingers crossed. I tell you what, I'll keep you up to date as far as my weight loss goes. Now, if you don't hear anything from me in a couple of weeks' time during the next podcast, you'll know that things aren't going all that well. I'll mention it, perhaps. That's my plight, and I'm sticking to it. I just want to get some of that ADHD focus back. Focus, focus, focus. Now, where's that stepladder to the wagon? Okay, enough of that. It's now time for the interview portion of our podcast. Maestro, if you would, please. Our interview for this edition of the podcast is with Megan Smith. Megan has ADHD. She has kids with ADHD. Plus, she's a psychologist. We started off the interview, as we normally do, by asking Megan when and how she got diagnosed with ADHD.
I was not diagnosed until I was 22.
Wow. How did that happen?
My life was a bit of a train wreck, and I couldn't figure it out. And I was seeing a doctor who, in all fairness, seems to me like a bit of a genius. And he had asked me a bit about, you know, my childhood growing up and school and where things had gone since then. And at the end of it, he's like, yeah, I really think that you actually have attention deficit disorder. Actually, I guess he had called it attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. Mm-hmm. And the first words out of my mouth were, yeah, no, that doesn't fit. And he said, why? And I said, because I'm exhausted all the time. Like, I agree I was hyper as a kid, but now I'm just chronically exhausted. And he said, well, it's not really about the hyperactivity, especially for adults. And so, yeah, I mean, it was a very crazy kind of an experience. I actually had one of the first things I did and one of the first things I always do was researched. And one of the first books that I had taken out was You Mean I'm Not Lazy, Crazy, or Stupid? And I'm like, oh, that's a genius title for a book, because that's pretty much exactly what I was wondering. And I was pretty relieved to find that I was none of those things.
That's funny because a lot of adults usually find out themselves and have to convince their medical professional that I have ADHD, but for you it was the other way around.
Yeah, no, that one really did take me as a surprise. I mean, looking back, I was an absolute poster child for it and for the stereotypical male form of it. I don't think there's any pictures of me as a kid where I'm right side up and sitting still. I'm mostly hanging upside down or climbing something or swinging off something. But certainly by that age, you know, anybody else who had seen me, that was certainly not what they came up with. So that was really quite out in left field. And I mean, I had been really struggling for a while, and I had certainly tried, you know, antidepressants and that sort of thing. And really nothing had helped. You know, talk therapy hadn't helped. Medications up to then had not helped, but nothing really seemed helpful. And then, you know, one of the first things he did, obviously, was he had pulled me off my antidepressant I had been on, and put me on Ritalin. And, you know, I think there's not a single person who knew me at that point who wouldn't say that they weren't completely shocked at the 180 that my life did from that moment forward. Like, it was just, in a lot of ways, it feels like there's before then and there's after then. And it was just two completely different lives.
Now, talk about left field. You're a psychologist.
Yes.
With ADHD. Mm-hmm. Now, did your studies improve after the diagnosis, and how did that go about? How did you handle that?
Well, I was a bit of an oddball and quite lucky in a lot of ways. I mean, growing up, I had pretty bad grades, and, you know, my report cards were certainly not favorable to me. There's many, many comments that I look back at now and I'm like, actually, you know, you guys could not have been more wrong. I think I was very much misunderstood, but, you know, up until about grade 7, I got pretty bad marks. And then I spent a couple years in private school, which seemed helpful. And ironically, I'd also started dieting, which I now realize in retrospect resulted in me creating a lot of adrenaline because I wasn't eating enough and I was actually exercising quite a bit, which treated my ADHD. So I suddenly got A pluses for a while there. Once I stopped exercising and started eating better again, ironically, the ADHD symptoms were worse again, which made school harder again. So I spent a lot of time going to school for one semester, and I could pull off mostly A's without ever really trying or barely showing up for that matter. So in that way, I was really lucky. I know not everybody can pull things off just by winging them. So I'm very grateful for that. But I couldn't stay in school for any length of time. So I would really be exhausted at the end of a semester. And I remember feeling like one class just felt like forever. Like it was actually quite enormously painful just to sit through a class.
Mm-hmm.
There were some exceptions to that. If I was obviously really interested in something, I did spend a year at an alternative school, which was sort of enriched curriculum and had courses like law and that kind of thing that I really liked. But once I started medication, I absolutely, like I could focus for the first time in my life. I actually went back and did all the math and sciences that I had avoided and got straight A pluses. So,
wow.
Yeah, I mean, medication definitely helped. And, you know, I think it gave me a lot of clarity in why I was even in school, because I think up until then, I'd also only really been in school because that's just what you do.
Sure.
You know, I come from a family where school is valued fairly highly, and it was just the expectation. But once I was on medication, I began to develop a sense of direction, multi-tiered, granted, but still a sense of direction.
That's sort of unique, because a lot of people, I know myself included, when it comes to medication, it's almost like trial and error, but it sounds like you started off on the right foot when it came to the medication. That
in, all fairness, I mean, there weren't a lot of options at that point. And there was a lot of trial and error in the sense that it turned out, like, you know, at that time there was Ritalin and there was Dexedrine.
Yeah.
Both of which are short acting and both of which were fine. But it did take me a while to realize, for example, I couldn't take generic Ritalin because that gave me panic attacks. But the brand name was fine. It also was weird that the short-acting Ritalin lasted longer than the long-acting Ritalin at that time.
Yeah.
But neither lasted very long, so I seemed to metabolize it quite quickly. So I would have to take another one every 2.5 to 3 hours.
Yeah.
So that was actually quite challenging. I would have to set alarms because, of course, you need your medication to work to remember to take your medication, right? So,
yeah, that kind of goes against the ADHD grain.
Yeah, it was definitely a challenge, you know, and after I had my kids and came back to the doctor, there were several more options out there that had sort of come up that I hadn't even known to ask about yet. And I really only asked about it at that time because I'd sort of caught wind of some new drugs that had come. And honestly, that created a lot more trial and error because I didn't want to keep taking them every 2.5 hours because that felt ridiculous. But honestly, none of the long-acting ones felt good in my body. Like, they all kind of made me feel, I don't know, cranky, irritable, just not right.
Yeah.
And then Vyvanse came along, and I just found that for me that was perfect. Like, it did not feel like I had highs and lows. It didn't make me feel cranky. It was really quite fantastic.
And so up until then, as a kid, now, how long ago was that? Were you a child of the 70s, 80s?
So most of my schooling was 80s, 90s. Well, my pre-graduate school experiences anyway. So, yeah, I was a kid of the 80s for school, and it was not good times.
I wouldn't think so.
Yeah, no, you know, I mean, I spent most of my life at the back of the classroom with my desk facing the wall, and there was certainly, you know, tons of bullying. In fact, I was in the hospital in grade 1 because 2 grade 2 boys punched me so hard I passed out and slid face down down a cement hill. And yeah, I mean, it was really, really bad, you know, and I think the impression of teachers was kind of that I was asking for it, right? Like, there was a lot of comments to my mother about, well, you know, she provokes people. And I think there's some truth to that, but I also think that because kids without these issues are more savvy. They're very good at turning on the charm when adults are looking.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very good at being pretty terrible people when adults are not looking. And
right.
And it's that self-control that allows them to get away with it, whereas I was the same wherever I was because I didn't have the ability to hide anything. So the teachers saw everything that I did, and they made a lot of assumptions about things that I did
sure.
that I didn't do. There's also the sort of the paradox that kids with ADD often lie a lot, but they also tell the truth a lot. And
mm-hmm.
so it becomes very hard for people to appreciate that, yes, I may have lied these 4 times, but this time I'm not. And if there's 6 kids saying that I am, then
yeah.
they assume that I am, right? So that made it really easy to target me. And as a psychologist in the schools, I certainly, you know, I see so much of that where these kids are easily targeted
sure.
on the playground. You know, it's very easy to blame them and get them in trouble. They're reprimanded for things that other kids get away with very often. Like, it's really interesting when you get to sit back and be an observer and you're not the adult in charge, because I'm quite sure that when you're the adult in charge, it's very hard to keep everything, you know, under surveillance and to see everything that's going on. But yeah, I mean, as an observer, you see a lot of scapegoating of these kids, which is really sad. And I think it contributes to their, it becomes like a snowball effect where
sure.
they lie to get out of trouble because they're in trouble all the time. And the thought of being in trouble again is a little bit too much. So, I mean, if you could even remotely have a chance of getting out of that, why wouldn't you take it, right?
Well, that's something that I've noticed. Well, I've noticed that it's not noticed or talked about. I talk to a lot of people with ADHD and kids with ADHD, and I have ADHD. And bullying, it really isn't a big topic. It's mentioned once in a while. But for me, I think that's one of the key things that troubles me when it comes to ADHD kids in school is the bullying.
Mm-hmm.
And what they go through.
Yeah.
It's just sad, and that alone should be a reason why more people should learn more about ADHD, especially the people within the school system.
You know, I always find it a bit of a paradox that, you know, in a lot of ways, you know, psychiatry, psychology, you know, corrections agencies, schools, there's a lot of discounting of ADHD, and it's, you know, the idea that it's just ADHD.
Right.
And yet, you know, as I've said to many people and certainly other professionals, if you don't even have the ability to stop and think before you act, what else is there?
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things, I say it all the time, it just doesn't get respect. It's the Rodney Dangerfield of mental disorders that people just blow it off or even make fun of it. Oh, I had an mm-hmm. ADD moment and this and that. And you know, it really is something that should be addressed. And for you to be able to become who you've become, a psychologist, is, I find it amazing because of the roadblocks that we often have to face.
Yeah, and I mean, psychology is not exactly a diverse field. Like, psychologists tend to be from fairly advantaged backgrounds because it's a very challenging program to get into. You need a lot of sort of perfection on your transcripts,
mm-hmm.
and beyond grades, you need a lot of other things. It makes it very challenging to pull people into the field who might understand these things from anything but a book perspective. And,
right.
and there's, you know, I really value having ADHD as a psychologist because there's a lot of things that I can challenge that other people wouldn't think to challenge. And,
sure.
you know, as a random example, there's this idea of, you know, reward sensitivity and people with ADHD aren't as sensitive to reward and punishment. And I really dispute that. I agree that they've got some great research that seems to show that, but I have sort of alternative explanations for that. You know, for example, I would say that absolutely we're mostly extremely sensitive to punishment because
sure.
we get so much of it. Like, I don't really think, I think you can become accustomed to it in some ways, but I think you can also become extremely anxious and afraid of more.
When I was taught by nuns, I was much better off than when I was thrown into a public school system.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a structured system for me worked, and apparently it worked for you when you were in your boarding school.
Yeah, you know, and it wasn't boarding school, but it was a private school, so
a
there were smaller
school.
Classes. I think there was an emphasis on learning how to learn that you don't get in public schools, and perhaps the rest of the class was in enough control that they had a bit more time to spend on people like me, perhaps. Sure. We're not as easygoing and quiet. But yeah, I mean, there's, it's a funny thing. Like, I'm not a proponent of, you know, really emphasizing punishments and consequences with these kids because, you know, I actually think it's very, very cruel to be using punishment as a means of trying to control behavior in a creature that has not developed control over their own behavior. It's no different really than punishing someone for being diabetic or nearsighted. Yeah. You know, there's other ways. So whether it works or not, I almost don't care anymore. You know, I think it can work in the short term, but I think the damage that it does and that sense of being treated like you're just your behavior is very demeaning, right? Yeah. I think, you know, there are people like Ross Green. He wrote The Explosive Child and a book that's relevant for schools, which is Lost at School. He's got a couple of new ones as well, but I actually kind of prefer the old ones. But he's very much a proponent of identifying the skills that children are lacking with or without ADD and working with a child to identify, like, what are the situations where this is coming up and how can we work together to try to develop solutions to those situations. It teaches life skills that kids like us who have ADHD desperately need, which is how do you identify what the problem is? How do you see someone else's perspective? How do you articulate your own perspective? How do you really narrow down what's getting in your way of successfully meeting an expectation? And then how can you work with the adults in your life
mm-hmm.
or with anybody in your life to come up with solutions that actually address both people's concerns?
Right.
There's no, it's not about compromising, because even compromise, it means someone's losing something. It's about how do we create a situation where everybody's needs can be met?
Sure.
And it also teaches you to try it and then to come back to the table and to discuss what worked, what didn't work, and what can we try differently next time. And, you know, honestly, if you think about it, most of the world's problems could be solved if everybody had that skill. Capable of collaborative problem solving, we would not have these problems.
Especially south of the border these days.
Absolutely. You know, like, I mean, it's really kind of crazy that there's this huge emphasis on using behavior modification, which, by the way, wasn't even entirely successful in rats, on something as complex as a human child. And instead of working with them and acknowledging that the reason they're getting in trouble is because their brain does not work the way it needs to work for them to stay out of trouble.
Right.
And for so long as we continue to use rewards and punishments, I also think we've kind of reinforce the idea that other people have that this is a behavioral issue when it's really not.
Yeah. You bring up an interesting point. As soon as you were talking about the kids in school and make sure that everybody wins, I would think that if schools treat ADHD the way it should be treated, I mean, you're living proof that we're not stupid, that, you know, that there'd be a calm in the classroom that everyone benefit.
Right. And, you know, all ADHD kids are different, and there are some that come with more than just ADHD.
Sure.
In fact, I'm sure plenty do.
Yep.
But I actually do dispute the idea that ADHD, an oppositional defiant disorder, which, by the way, is not a thing because it's just a list of bad things people do. So I disagree with calling that a diagnostic label because it doesn't tell you anything about why they are. And in my opinion, I think the reason you often see that in kids with ADD is because if you're going to chronically punish and judge and criticize and isolate a child for something that they can do nothing about, how do you avoid being oppositional?
Yeah.
I honestly don't know. I like to use the analogy of imagine that you, every person is given a car that they have to drive for the rest of their life.
Mm-hmm.
And it just so happens that you've been given a car where the brakes don't work. All right, so now we're using an analogy for impulsivity specifically, which is probably what gets kids in the most trouble.
Telling them to put on the brakes, they don't have brakes.
Right, so you know what, you imagine you're in this car, it doesn't have brakes that work, and so you see a red light and you slam on the brakes, and what happens? You go through the red light, and then the police pull you over and they give you a ticket. That happens one day, it's frustrating. That happens 2 days, that's mm-hmm. really frustrating. But can you imagine if every single day
sure.
you had to drive to work and you had to drive that car and you couldn't fix it because that's your lot in life, and you just kept getting those tickets over and over and over and over? Who can live like that without having serious mental health consequences? It's learned helplessness, right? It's like the old experiments where they would zap rats and nothing they could do would make the zapping stop, and they eventually basically lie down and die. They give up.
That's the sad thing, is that people, kids with ADHD grow up to be adults with ADHD. And if it's not treated in the earlier days, boy, it's a scary thought.
Absolutely. But, you know, it's funny because some people will say, well, if you can't change the impulsivity, what can we do? And I always say, well, there's a few things to keep in mind. Number one, the prefrontal cortex, which is largely responsible for our impulse control, it's developing until we're well into our mid-20s. Probably a bit later for people with ADD. So there will be some natural improvement moving along as kids get older. Number two, any anxiety or emotional distress that you add into it shuts down the prefrontal cortex. So if you want kids to have the most possible control that they can have, you need to help them learn to feel calm, relaxed, and supported. Their prefrontal cortex will always be at their best if they're well-rested and they feel safe and supported. If you stress them out and if you make them feel afraid or misunderstood or frustrated, they are losing what little impulse control they have right there. On top of all of that, if you create an environment where you're sitting down and talking with the kid and problem-solving, so if we go back to the car analogy, if you sat down and talked to the person and they said, well, okay, so your problem is you can't have me running through red lights. I get it. My problem is no matter how hard I slam on my brakes, they don't work. And then you could talk and you could be like, well, do they work ever? And maybe there's like a little bit of brake there. So yeah, you know, I can stop after half a block. You know, you can start to develop solutions like, well, someone could look ahead for you and they could give you a warning a block away that there's a red light coming up. And that could give you the time you need to slow down and stop by the time you hit that red light. But if people are just assuming that you should be able to stop your car and the only reason you're not stopping your car is because you don't really care or you're not really trying hard enough, they're going to keep writing you tickets and everybody is losing.
We have a lot of people who are listening now who were diagnosed as an adult. As an adult, and you weren't diagnosed as a child, is there still hope for us?
Absolutely. I think from the moment that we find out, we have a much better chance of, first and foremost, developing some self-compassion. I guess we can go two ways. One would be to feel like the world is a pretty crappy place and people are jerks and nobody understands, and you could kind of come off as being arrogant and irresponsible and whatever. Or you could become anxious, depressed, and have an overly inflated sense of responsibility and self-blame and, you know,
sure,
agree with everybody who's been blaming you all these years. And I think either way, it gives us to develop healthy self-compassion and to start doing our own problem solving, because there's a lot of things that people with ADD can do to treat their symptoms in addition to medication, right? Like exercise is tremendously helpful and getting enough sleep is crucial. And I always advise people, you know, get a sleep study done, because there's a really good chance you're going to have issues with slow wave sleep or deep sleep.
Sleep apnea here. I've got it.
Yeah, I mean, if you have sleep apnea and you don't treat it, there's nothing you can do. I mean, even people without ADHD, you throw the sleep apnea in and they will develop those symptoms, right? Because if you don't get enough deep sleep, you have all the symptoms of ADHD, whether you started that way or not.
Well, we are winding down on time. I'd love to talk to you more. Perhaps we can follow it up. We could call you a role model to the fact that you have ADHD. You have become, well, in this case, so you had to have your doctorate, a doctor per se, a psychologist. And I want to give you a round of applause for that, for what it's worth, because I know it's not easy.
Well, thank you.
And perhaps we can call you again and we'll further our conversation.
Absolutely.
That was Megan Smith. We'd like to thank Megan for joining us on the podcast and telling her story, and she's got more to offer, so we'll be sure to be in touch with her again fairly soon. It's Club ADHD, the podcast, as we wind down. I think we had a pretty good edition this time round. Please be sure to tell a friend if you enjoyed what you heard. Yeah, the more the merrier. We have people finding out about us each and every day. We'd like to get those numbers up quicker, though. That's my goal, right? If we can get it quicker, we can have a bigger club, more input when it comes to the Facebook page and the Twitter account and all that. And don't forget, you can catch the links to those aspects of Club ADHD by visiting clubadhd.ca. Once again, we'd like to thank CADAC for helping make this all possible. CADAC, the Center for ADHD Awareness Canada. Be sure to visit their website at CADAC, that's CADDAC.ca. Well, that's about it for this edition of the podcast. This is Russ LeBlanc, your ADHD host, wishing you and yours a great day, a great couple of weeks, and don't forget to spread the word. ADHD is real. Bye for now.